This is the February 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley. He's at AgTraderTalk.com out of Watsika, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel is here from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and so is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. And there you can purchase your tickets for the WILAG Farm Doc Spring Outlook that's coming up on Tuesday, the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. 10 of our regular analysts, the whole of the Farm Doc team, and a Beef House lunch, all for $25. Oh, and if you've not ever, and I suspect this is the case, ever had the coffee and morning rolls from the Beef House, that's worth coming over to for just that. It's all $25. WILAG.org or 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300 during regular business hours to buy your tickets. Merrill Crowley, Kurt Kimmel, and Wayne Nelson will all be on hand for the day. And Wayne, thank you particularly for being with us again for your 31st appearance of 31 individual events at the Spring Outlook, All-Day Ag Outlook for the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We sure do appreciate all the time you've taken over the years.
Well, it's really been a pleasure and a lot of fun, and I am all excited and looking forward to see a lot of the people that we haven't got to see because of the COVID mess, and really excited about doing this year, Todd.
Well, you'll be excited about doing this, but you're going to have to come with the goods this year because there is just so much happening. I suppose by the time we get to the 8th day of March, we'll know what's happened with Russia and Ukraine. Beyond that, inflation and, of course, the drought in South America are the primary drivers. Which do you think will be most important between now and then?
Well, I think in the short term, we're going to be looking at Russia and the Ukraine because that's a given. We can see whether the troops move across the border or not. I was just reading an article that said that some of our up-to-date satellite imagery and like that isn't quite as good as we think it is, and we can't really tell whether they've increased or decreased troops on the border looking at that just because the way it isn't focused in like that. But they said that the governments themselves and the military have a little better they can look at it a little closer and have a little better radar with, as far as that goes. But I think it's going to be a big deal is to be watching here. Not sure. Hopefully it's much ado about nothing, but we don't know for sure.
So why is it a big deal, Kurt Kimmel? I understand why it's a big deal on the geopolitical front, but why is it a big deal for trade?
Well, just basically, as everyone's heard, it's Ukraine's a rich agricultural area, and it's a gateway to the ports to the rest of the world. A lot of grain comes out of there. You're talking, a lot of wheat, a lot of corn, and that being disrupted, along with the South American concern, this adds a little risk premium in through here because last thing we want to do is be caught short, particularly with the supply chain issue we've had here, and that's the last thing. You don't want to be caught short inventories, by like the toilet paper. You'd like to have a lot more on hand in case things get messy. But thing to remember is go back in history, and I know people want to erase history and change history, but the most recent war event was the Gulf, where we saw Iraq going to Kuwait, and the news media and everybody's led to believe Stormin' Norman's going to storm the beaches, and that's where all the pictures were. Hold, behold, he comes in the back door and comes in and does the job. So, yes, we do have a little bit more technology. We have a little bit more eyes on it, but it'd be kind of interesting to see how this unfolds here because the media and the public's all leaning one way. It'd be interesting to see what comes in the back door here.
And so, Merrill Crowley, as you watch this and think about what impact it has on trade, I suspect you're working through wheat and corn, particularly Ukraine and Russia, as it relates to those export markets. What information have you been able to glean?
Well, I agree with what Kurt said about the exports being stopped. And, of course, if they go to war, what about the fresh wheat crops that are out there, how much of that will get destroyed, how much planting of the corn will they get done next year. So far, if my understanding and my numbers are right in my head, they've got about 17.5 million metric ton of corn already moved out, but I believe that they have 31 million metric ton on the books. So somewhere, somebody would have to come up with a corn to help stop the gap, if you will. I think another thing, though, that's kind of missed is there's a lot of natural resources in the Ukraine, one being the crude. And I think if you really want to know whether or not they're invading or not, I'd watch the crude market. I think that's the biggest key. Wheat would be another one, but I just think the crude will be a bigger key because you'll shut off a lot of the crude, and with crude supplies as low as they are right now, that would push that higher, should help support the bean oil, should help support ethanol, and pull wheat and corn prices and soybean prices higher.
And one of the issues has always been that the Europeans, Western Europe, that is provided with energy in part by the Russians, and those pipelines run right through Ukraine. So they are vital to the Western European country. I think that, Wayne Nelson, you had some additional comments.
I did here. Belarus is also one of the big potash companies is at, and as Russia was holding their talks, talking to the Brazilian farmers and trying to entrench themselves a little bit more into their supply chain, they told that Russia would double the fertilizer supplies to the Brazilian farmers facing shortages of fertilizer. And as we all know, there's a real big block up in the fertilizer pipeline here this year, especially with that flowing out of Belarus in the Belarus Potash Company, and out of Russia also. So that is a big deal when we get into that also, so because we still all need some more fertilizer before the spring planting time comes around.
Well, let's talk about things directly related to the price of corn and soybeans. Merrill Crowley, I think I will turn to you maybe for some input as it relates to the technicals. And Kurt Kimmel, you can follow up if you'd like.
I guess I'll just talk with beans and Kurt can fill in corn. That's a good deal. Weekly cycle low due mid-May, 3-year cycle low due mid-May. Now, for quite some time, I've been talking about when you have South American droughts, there's a tendency for the market to make a May high. And that's kind of interesting that I'm finding these lows coming due in May after I rechecked my lows and my low timings. So, and sometimes you can have what they call an inversion on a cycle low. I don't think that option is real high. Then when you take a look at when you had this February high with the announcement from CONAB of 125 million metric tons of soybeans coming out, one of the lowest actual announced levels by a government agency, the market made a high and then backed off quickly. That's really a sign of a cycle or a market high, the way it acted. And it's the same with corn, but I'll stick with beans. We went ahead, and I had been talking about filling the May gap at 1598, and that day we filled it, went up clear up to 1634.5. Last year's high, 1677 and a quarter, support of 1480, support of 1460 on the May chart. So the short-term momentum right now is double-topping, and the long-term momentum is showing signs of moving lower. So these are starting to tell me that it's really possible we got a May high. Now, I have a five-wave count going up into that high. That suggests we may just see a correction. That's why I'm talking about the 1480 on the continuous chart and the 1460 on the May chart being support. We need to watch that closely. We're trading beans right now around 1590. If I was trying to do something marketing-wise, I don't think I really want to wait till I get down to 1480, 1460 as a trigger point. So my thinking is somebody needs, you need to do something to take some risk off the table. As a marketer, I think at this point in time, I would rather price some cash and then, since the cycle lows are coming due, try to pick up calls at a lower price level. Now, there's risk in that you don't get the calls back. But everybody keeps saying flexible, and I think, in general, if you're going to be flexible in markets, you basically have to use options. If you'd rather use puts, that's fine. But these options are extremely expensive, and you may need to use a bear put spread or a bull call spread to make this work.
Yeah, one thing to keep in mind, and Merrill's kind of dead on. Well, he is dead on here. You did a great job there, Merrill. But if you would pull out a long-term price chart, which we've handed out at many of meetings that go back to the 70s, and you go to more research, and they give you a complimentary chart there and about any commodity. The reason I bring this up is if you go back in history and look what happens when you're straight up like this, the market has a tendency to come straight back down. It's not like the bottoming action. Topping actions have been spike highs clear back to the 70s. So if you're a trader, you're long. It's going to go higher, 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 higher. But as Merrill hinted on here, if you're a producer, you got to sell or have a plan on the way up, because what will happen is when it does top, everybody waits for the day cap bounce, and it's hard to get stuff sold. Then plus two, on the option side, you have to do something on the rallies. And what I mean by that is, for example, we trade it here. We do it. We live it. We bought puts. Well, those puts have gone down in value, but the bean market's rallied $2. We've lost 30 cents in the puts, but we gained $2 on the future. So do the math, you're $1.70 ahead. If you don't make a cash sale or do something this level and the market goes back down, well, you've given up a $2 gain and your put's probably worth less than what you paid for it. Same thing on the calls. We sold quite a few calls and they're against us. But the strategy is when you get to this $6.50, $7, or $18 benchmark, you come out of the call, you buy them back, take the hit, but you got to make that cash sell that same day. And that's how you do the marketing and take advantage of using the puts and the calls and whatever strategy you have. But you got to stick to your plan. Don't get caught in the motion, because the motion's real high, the noise is real loud. And a lot of people are buying the strength and selling the weakness, and you just get ate up alive. So Merrill had some great points to watch there, and I think you got to have a plan and stick to it there.
Any follow-up, Wayne?
We have way too many people that, get mad because they bought a put and it goes up, like Kurt says, and then they get disappointed and says the put didn't work. Well, it did. It put the bottom under it. It's just like insurance. You really don't want your house to burn down just because you got good insurance on it. But along the way, I think that another thing we're looking at here is a three-day weekend, Todd. We're coming up here with all of the activity or non-activity, or we're looking for activity in the Ukraine-Russian border. Number one, we're looking at possibly some better showers coming into South America over that time period. And we're just looking at trying to decide what the acreage is going to be here in the U.S. and the planet acres. You know, a Nutrien come out with plain guesses of 91 to 93 million acres of corn and 87 to 89 million acres of beans. But we see a lot of people just seem to be heading to the sidelines starting today and probably a few more tomorrow, just not knowing what's going to happen with weather forecasts and activity over in the Russian area.
The commodity markets, of course, are closed on Monday for President's Day in the United States. They won't open again until Monday evening for trade into Tuesday. I do have a follow-up for you, Wayne, as well, related to the risk management that Merrill and Kurt started to talk about just a little bit. And I'm wondering how producers are asking you questions about their crop insurance decisions with these high prices halfway through the month of February.
Well, the first thing they say, it's going to cost me a lot more this year, won't it? And I said, yes, because you're insuring a lot nicer house or car or whatever like that. But most of them are thrilled to death to have these sort of guarantee levels. And knowing, especially looking at the price of fertilizer and their inputs this year, that it's not going to be quite as hard of a conversation with their banker when they go in and say what they're going to need to borrow this year to put this crop out. So, but all in all, I think that there's very few changes have really been made to the program. We have some target counties that are being able to pay off some different special programs this year, like with split application with nitrogen and also cover crops and things like that. But most of the guys are going to probably stay in that 80 to 85% revenue protection policies, and it's going to cost them. But it's just like those options. You know, when we're buying options at the level we're buying them here, you know, if you're buying a $15 put, it should cost you a little more because you're insuring a whole lot more dollars along the way. So I think I don't think we're going to see anybody that's going to be skimping on their insurance this year, because I think they're all going to feel that as we look at all of these weather forecasts, you know, we didn't even get into that when we were talking about problems out there, but a lot of the extended weather forecasts that come out today are showing a lot of dry weather in the western U.S., and I think they want to make sure that they've got some good insurance coverage this year.
I want to stay with insurance coverage for just a bit. Have you been getting questions about using the harvest price exclusion, and what are your thoughts?
I think that's a silly idea. You know, we do not recommend that harvest price exclusion because basically along the way that gives you, if we really would have some other major problems and the price go way up, that it can make your insurance worth so much more. When we look and go back at different times like this, that was one of the great things about the RP policy, and when they developed it and went on, that you did have the harvest price for higher prices or lower prices in the fall. What if we put all these inputs in things, and you know, we want to have that extra money available to us.
Gary Schnicke made note on Thursday morning during the webinar that I hosted for the Farm Dog team that the last time prices were this high, and maybe Wayne, you can confirm this, for both corn and soybeans in the February timeframe was 2012. And if you'd used HPE in that year, it would have been difficult, which is what I think you're trying to tell us about HPE this time around. And of course, then you talked a little bit about the weather forecast. They're looking forward into the summer months. Some of the meteorologists thinking dry conditions in the West might persist and even into the Western Corn Belt, as well as in parts of, you know, Kansas with the hard red winter wheat growing regions. Kurt Kimmel, I'll turn back to you for just a bit, maybe to talk about not the drought that could be in the United States, but the drought that is in South America. How much of a cut has there been, and are there expectations for more to come yet from Argentina and southern Brazil?
Well, the rhetoric is how low is low, because we're going to take the low number as low as we can here and see who's right. But Brazil particularly, we've seen estimates as low as 120, 122 million metric tons. And the significance of that is clear back last fall there, the world was eager to see them produce 145 million metric tons. And so there's a huge, huge shortfall there. Then you combine the other countries there and talk of that, and they're going to have to import some beans to have some supplies to work with on crush and so forth. So just add fuel to the fire. Where we're at, it's going to take some time to figure it out. A lot of the commercial guys and advisors and that those areas are saying it is serious. So we're just going to have to see how these harvest yields come out. We're still early. Brazil's in this 25-26% harvested area, and we still got a long ways to go on it. But I imagine, you know, we're probably in this 132-130 area for right now. Then we'll have to see if Argentina receives some rain here next week or in the first week of March.
I'd like to turn your attention, Merrill Crowley, to the demand side of both corn and soybeans. What do we know about crush in the United States and ethanol demand based on the latest sets of numbers that have been released?
We've seen ethanol demand pullback. Not demand, I'm sorry. Ethanol crush pullback. Their margins aren't as good as they were at the beginning of the year. They were quite high then, and crush is also for beans has also pulled back. So that's, we've seen what was it, Nanopa crush last month was lower than the previous month, and I don't think it was lower than last year, but anyway, it was down when everybody was expecting it to continue higher. So it's a little too early to tell what is going to continue to happen. As Kurt was saying, we've got the weather problems. If you looked at some of the long-range forecasts for South America, we're not done there yet. They are suggesting that the drier areas that we have down there in Argentina and southern Brazil will then start getting rains. And the coordinator said they weren't making the progress with the corn planting like they had hoped. Then you have a switch in the pattern where the wet areas in the north are going to become the dry areas, and that centers you right over Mato Grosso. Well, if you center yourself over Mato Grosso, that's the largest safrinha producing state in Brazil. Long-range forecast, you decide what kind of importance you want to place on it, but it is interesting to see how that happens. Then as you follow the weather into the U.S., you know, that drought map hasn't changed just a whole lot from when we had fall. And so what kind of weather we're going to see, La Nina has come back when they thought it was going to switch to an El Nino, and it seems to have come back more with a vengeance, which it makes it more likely that we'll see continuation of drought. The other time that we had a La Nina, then had it come back as a strong La Nina, was 2011 and 12. So that's why I guess when we talk about marketing, trying to be flexible, that could be pretty scary if this thing gets really going. Beans had a failed head and shoulders top that I was looking at, and once you negate a head and shoulders, you can then project from that pattern, and beans get up to 17.5. For corn, I still have my 685 May gap that hasn't been closed, but we got it within about 23, 24 cents of filling that gap. Once you see that gap close, the next thing is the 85. The next thing is about 775, I believe, in the continuous contract of corn for a high. On the bottom side, you do have support around 460, 480, but, you know, again, that's a wide spread, and I guess that's why I'm working more with cash sales and protecting with calls. I kind of got off subject there, but this market is really set up to go two different ways. And in order to get, say, the $17 beans or the $7.70 corn, you're going to have something else happen. You're going to have more weather problems. You're going to have more demand, or you're going to have to see the war break out, or a combination of those three, and who knows if it's a black swan event down the road. But as we sit right now, I think the market has most of our bullishness worked in, and I don't think you can go that much lower on your production with South America on the beans anyway, because I just think you probably about as low as you can go. And what's another 1 to 2 million? That's not going to make that much difference. However, we really haven't hurt the corn down there because that crop came in later and got some of the later rains. If we have the drought and we have it over Mato Grosso and the northern states, that could really push the corn market. The third thing I see that could really help these markets is wheat. Again, the Russian-Ukraine problem could help push the wheat, but I've got a head and shoulders bottom in the wheat that actually is pushing wheat to $9. Could that morph and change and fail just like the bean one did? Sure. But right now, you're sitting here and you're just kind of sitting here like the blind justice bouncing two weights here and trying to decide which one's going to be the one to take over. Take care of your risk. Have your money figured out for your budget, for what you need, and have a plan to attack this market. It's going to be an emotional roller coaster ride.
Wayne, how will elevators react as it relates to basis if the market continues to go higher?
In general, unless there's a very, very strong cash market where they have premiums that they can bid up and use and turn around and sell immediately, as we go up like this, their hedging costs go up, everything like that, we generally tend to see a little wider basis unless there is a tremendously good cash demand out there for like quick ship, and most of that would be for quick shipment, Todd. If you're going to see the basis pushes, it's going to be for cash now rather than later as the elevators are using it, or you would see how they're doing it. And you will find that because they don't want to push their basis levels for type market, especially that way. If you've noticed, a lot of times there's generally a quick shipment bid, and that relates back and tells you what's going on along that respect. You know, I guess what we're seeing right now is we're sort of seeing a pause hit this market right around the levels here going into the three-day weekend. You know, that we are basically up pretty good enough when we're sitting around 650 in the corn, when we're sitting around the $16 in the beans and that. And we're going to, I think the market's going to take a little pause over the weekend, unless I'm really off. You know, tomorrow will be sort of a consolidation day and let everybody go, you know, home for the weekend with the idea of holding the positions that they want to hold. Now, we do see March expiration tomorrow. We seem to have pulled away from, like a lot of the guys said, most of the puts that were bought. Most of those are going to expire worthless in that way. But some of the calls are going to be, you know, very much coming into effect. But I see them sort of staying around the even numbers for expiration tomorrow.
Let's get a final word now from each of you, I think. I'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Commodity market's gone wild. It's a rodeo. But if you have a chance, call Wayne's office. Talk to John over there. He's always a hoot to talk to. I was visiting with him here a while back. And, well, I don't know. We won't hit the high. I go, yes, we will, John. I'll get the high end for you. He goes, what do you mean? I go, when I get bullish and buy it, that'll be the high. So well, that's one way. But things to look for on the topping market, along with Merrill's points there to watch very closely, too, is one, the exchange will increase the margin rates. That way, when the market goes down, people's got margin money to back it. And two, those call options, they will evaporate or erode very, very quickly because that's the first sign the trade's comfortable with the market going the other way.
Merrill Crowley from AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. Your final word for the day?
I just wanted to talk on the insurance values I have of tonight. 584.5 corn, 1422.5 for beans. Comparing 2012, that was 568 and 1255. So we're quite a bit higher than the 2012. How about a lottery ticket? March wheat, 850 calls, trading at 5.5 cents, expires next Friday. But that'll get you through a whole week's worth of trading. If Russia attacks over the weekend, you probably will see a pretty decent payback. April 6-10 puts for corn at 5 cents. That also expires next Friday. But, again, gets you through the long weekend in case weather changes or something happens where they pull out of the Ukraine or pull away from them. And then for the soybeans, a 15-20 put at 14 cents expires February 15. Another thing to get you through the weekend should the weather market change and get wetter for South America.
And finally, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana.
You know, we've been looking here, and it's sort of an average out there at all the meetings and talking to other different brokers that the farmer sold 75 to 80% of his old crop corn and probably 20 to 25% of his 22 crop corn. That way. We think that on rally, further rallies from here, we'd like to increase that a little bit. And as we do increase that a little bit, we are probably going to look to a bull call spread out there to try to do something in case this weather market does go crazy on us on something that way. But like I say, I think that we need to reward rallies and watch here and continue to sell into this. Now, that doesn't mean that we're wanting to go to 80 or 90% sold on new crop corn, but it does mean we can schedule in, you know, a little bit up to that 40 to 45%.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or search out Commodity Week in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois. All three of them will join us at the Beef House on the 8th day of March. I hope you will as well, but you need your ticket. Get yourself registered today at willag.org. The day-long event is just $25, includes 10 of our Will Ag panelists, along with the agricultural economist, the FarmDoc team from the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.